There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
A competitive spirit is part of what drives professional athletes. They strive not only to be better than their competitors, but better than the athlete that they once were. However, there are some out there who will do whatever it takes to win, no matter the cost. This is the story of figure skating legend Nancy Kerrigan. She was assaulted for her skills in the figure skating world. The attack on her was meant to take her out of the competition for good and raise someone else to the top instead. This is her story. My name's Ben.
And I'm Nicole, and you're listening to Wicked and Grim,
a true crime podcast. So our first ever podcast video is officially up on YouTube. We got it done.
We did it, finally.
It took a little while to get everything figured out, but it's done. It's up. This one's being recorded and being thrown up on YouTube too. A little bit of a round of applause and a pat on our back because I'm proud of ourselves for that.
Third time's charm, wasn't it?
It was.
Just took three times. That's not terrible.
Not bad at all, you know? But it's up there. We got it done. So we're going to continue posting these in video format. If you want to check it out, YouTube link down below. We have two YouTube channels for the record, a vlog one and one that actually hosts the podcast. So they're both in the description.
Very cool.
But we got a lot going on that we're going to talk about. We're going to get through this real quick so we can get onto the episode, which is Nancy Kerrigan, which is a very heavily researched one. Took a long time to get through.
I could imagine.
If you don't know this, it is a wild sports story. So we're going to get into that. But first, we want to thank our patrons.
We do.
Everyone who signed up on Patreon.
Absolutely.
So this week we had John Wiseman, Chelsea Adler, and Amanda all sign up on Patreon, and they're getting the behind the scenes, the extra content, all that good stuff.
All the things.
All the things.
Thank you so much. Thank you. That's awesome.
They're also getting a heads up on something that we just recorded prior to this.
It took us about five times. But we got it. We nailed it.
We're no voice actors by any means. So it took us a bit. But we have a podcast trailer coming out. And
finally, after 200 episodes.
Right? Well, nearly. I think we're on episode, this is 171 or 772, I think.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, they got the heads up on the script and everything. And they're going to hear the actual trailer before it's released live. So
it's awesome.
I think we did a good job.
Yeah, I'm pretty pumped about it.
There's a little like seasoning in there that hints at like our name Wicked and Grim that I love.
It's real good.
Yeah. So I'm pretty proud of ourselves for that one too. So another round of applause for ourselves and patting back.
Holy heck. Hey, we deserve a treat or something.
No kidding. Well, I've got a drink. I don't know about you.
I just have water.
Just water?
Yeah.
Well, hydration is important.
It is. You know, the good old counting calories.
Right.
Beers? Well, actually, I don't know how much calories is in a can of beer.
Yeah, they don't count.
Oh, okay.
No.
Okay.
It has zero calories.
Maybe I should have one then.
You should. I'm especially not going to be counting the calories when we are over at our friend Deadfall recording our next true crime trivia day.
Yeah, I will. I won't count calories that day.
Either. No. So we're going to be hosting this true crime trivia day. We're going to be streaming live probably on Instagram or Patreon or something. We haven't figured out exactly yet, but we're going to be doing a live stream as well. And yeah, it's going to be a good time.
This is our second time doing it. The first one was friggin' amazing.
It was a blast.
So fun.
I don't understand how all these people are so smart with true crime trivia.
I mean, because honestly, if Ben and I were in attendance, we would not have, like, people wouldn't want us on their team.
No, we would do so bad. I think it's probably because we research so much that it's like the information we take in flushes out the information in our head.
Yeah, but I've always sort of had an issue of retaining
me things too.
Because even like when I was in university, I would do a course, do the exam, and then it was gone.
Forget it.
Like just gone.
In one ear, out the other.
Yeah.
No, I feel you there. I'm the same way, 100%. I usually retain the useless information, useless stuff.
Yeah, like what's Barbie's full name?
Barbara Melenis Roberts.
There you go.
Yep. I've known that since I was like 12. I just was like cruising the internet, looking up weird facts, learned that, and it's stuck with me since.
Anytime you say anything in regards to you retain useless information, I ask you that same question.
Yep. You do. Anyways, you guys didn't come here to learn more about Barbie. You came here to listen to the story of Nancy Kerrigan.
Mm-hmm.
So should we dive into it?
Let's do it.
Okay. We're going to dive in. We're going to do our best attempt at a proverbial triple axel and tell you this story.
Wow.
How was that?
I liked that.
Yeah. I just pulled that off the top of my head.
Really? So, okay. Yeah. I thought that was in your script.
Definitely not. No. Okay. So Nancy was born in the quaint town of Stoneham, Massachusetts. She emerged as a figure skating sensation from her beginnings. Now, she was the youngest of her siblings and was the sole daughter of Daniel and Brenda Kerrigan. Nancy's journey to the ice rink began when she was quite young. Now, her family had deeply rooted roots, if you will, in a blue-collar kind of valued town family sort of thing. Just your standard good valued type people.
Okay.
They were a mix of English, Irish, and a German heritage. So while her brothers pursued hockey, Nancy, though still donning the skates, instead found her passion gliding gracefully on the ice at the age of only 6 years old.
Wow.
Despite limited resources, her father, Daniel, epitomized sacrifice. He was often juggling multiple jobs to support Nancy's skating endeavors and, of course, her brother's hockey as well.
Well, yeah, those are not cheap sports.
No, especially hockey. Yeah.
Yeah.
He even volunteered as a Zamboni driver for Nancy's skating lessons at the local rink.
My gosh, I love this. I love this family.
They're just like a close-knit, blue-collar, good-valued family, like I said, right? Mm-hmm. And they're tight. They're doing what they need to do, especially for their kids. So props to them, 100%. Now, under the guidance of her first coach, Teresa Martin, Nancy's talent began to blossom. However, it was her transition to working with the renowned duo Evie and Mary Scottvold that marked her big turning point in her career.
Okay.
So once she kind of joined this duo as her coach, that's when she really began to propel herself in the kind of competitive world. So throughout her competitive journey, the Scottvolds remained pillars of support, helping nurture her figure skating potential and just really honing those skills. So I think they saw something in her and they really helped her develop it.
Yeah, that sounds like good coaches.
Oh, definitely. Now, Nancy moved to a national competitive prominence, but it was a gradual move. Soon, her prowess as a jumper would distinguish her from her competitors. So as she's kind of going to this national level, she began to get this ability to jump higher and better than the competitors she was with.
Man, I mean, props to anyone that is good at figure skating. I can't skate to save my soul.
I can skate really good, but I cannot stop, which means I can't do much else other than go.
It's actually super dangerous.
Oh, yeah, it is. I know. Now, her senior debut signaled the beginning of a steady climb up in the national rankings, culminating in a bronze medal in the 1989 Winter Universiade. Nancy's race towards greatness continued. Its upward trend continued further and further as she clinched third place in the 1991 U.S. Figure Skating Championship. So the country, she clinched that third place prize.
Look at her go.
This achievement granted her entry into the highly coveted 1991 World Figure Skating Championships, where she secured the bronze medal.
Wow, that is super impressive.
No kidding. So notably, her win contributed to a historic milestone as the United States actually claimed a clean sweep of the women's podium at the world's champion for the first time ever.
Oh, I bet they were proud of that.
Yeah. So her and her teammates were all standing side by side on that podium.
Very cool.
The 1992 season saw Nancy's remarkable consistency and improvement as she once again surpassed her previous year's performance at the national championships, securing the runner-up position. Her stellar form extended onto the international stage, where she claimed bronze medal in the 1992 Winter Olympics and followed it up with a silver at the 92 World Championships. So she's just getting better and better and better.
She means business.
The 1993 season marked a significant milestone in Nancy's career as she ascended to the top, claiming the title of United States champion. Despite encouraging the inevitable highs and lows inherited with competitive sports, Nancy's unwavering determination and commitment to her craft continued to push her forward. Alongside her athletic pursuits, she delved into the realm of sponsorships, navigating the complexities and endorsement deals and stuff like that, right? Still, though, she pushed on and kept going through her journey. Nancy remained a force to be reckoned with in the figure skating world, which brings us to 1994.
I just wanted to say, too, to have those kind of awards, I guess you could call them, like, you have to have pretty big dedication to it. Yeah, I mean, she would be eat, sleeping, and breathing.
Oh, definitely. Skating. I think the word you're looking for is accolades.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. To have that sort of stuff. Yeah.
Recognition, you know, like all that. Like, she was the best in the state, in the United States.
She's top tier. Yeah. And to be top tier like that, you have to work for it.
Oh, yeah.
She certainly was.
Yeah. You have to put a lot of energy and a lot of time into that.
No doubt. 100%. Now, it was on January 6th, though, in 1994. Let's get back to this here. That Nancy Kerrigan was hard at work on the ice preparing for the U.S. Figure Skating Championships, which is being held in Detroit, Michigan. It was no secret that Nancy was good. With a competitive history, she was a top contender to win the competition. Each skater was doing their thing, warming up on the ice, you know, getting their practice routines in, but of course, also eyeing up the competition. Nancy had just finished up one of her practice sessions at the Cabo Arena and was leaving the ice rink when she was assaulted. The moment she stepped off the ice, it was even captured on camera by a film crew who was working with the competition. They followed Nancy when she stepped off the ice and until the moment she went behind a draping blue curtain over the rink exit towards the changing rooms. As Nancy walked away and heading down the hallway from the ice rink, the camera turned off. She was approached in that moment in the hallway by a man. In that instant, Nancy was attacked, and the man took a metal baton and struck her right above the right knee, the same leg Nancy used to land her signature jumping moves that she was so well known for. Nancy began screaming in pain as the man fled. Within seconds, people were swarming around Nancy and the camera was turned back onto her. She cried, asking repeatedly, "Why? Why? Why?" Just why was she attacked? It was immediately clear this was a targeted assault, one that was meant to take Nancy out of the competition.
Oh my gosh, hey.
I remember when this went down.
Yeah. I didn't realize that so much of it was documented.
Oh, there.
I don't remember that part.
Yeah. There was a camera crew following her
right there.
And the second the camera turned away, the assault happened.
Oh my gosh. It would have been the last thing that she would have ever expected.
Yeah. I mean, you're at a rink practicing. Yeah. There's people. This is broad daylight.
Well, yeah. I mean, like, ice rinks too are probably sort of feel like her safe place, you know, like her second home.
Yeah.
Huh. Brutal.
Probably her first home, really, because she's spending so much time there.
Actually, probably.
Yeah.
Whoa. Okay.
I can't imagine. Now, the aftermath of the attack unfolded as captured by, as I mentioned, a camera that was broadcast globally, with Nancy screaming in pain and being carried away by her father, Daniel.
Oh, my. Oh, her dad was there, too?
Her dad was there and carried her away. The injury forced her to withdraw from the U.S. championships, but her fellow skaters rallied behind her, unanimously agreeing that she deserved a spot on the Olympic team. So she didn't make the qualifyings because, like, she was injured, of course, but they still decided, you know, she deserves a spot to be on the Olympic team, even though she didn't make the qualifyings.
Because she would have had to go in that championship in place.
Correct.
In order to go.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. So they were recognizing her talent, determination at the USFSA, which is the United States Figure Skating Association. And they made the decision to include her in the Olympic roster anyways.
That's pretty impressive.
So they held a spot for her regardless of her injury, regardless of her not placing.
Right on. They said, that seems a little bit surprising.
Yeah.
So good though.
But I mean, still, she's injured. There's a lot of uncertainty looming over not only the question if she's going to be able to make the Olympics, but if she's ever even going to be able to skate again.
That's true. So they're being pretty optimistic.
They are. They're like, if you can make it, there's a spot for you. But still, can you even skate? Who knows? Now, fortunately, medical assessment revealed that her leg miraculously remained unbroken. Instead, she sustained only severe bruising to the impacted area. So she was struck right above the right knee on her thigh with a metal baton, and it did not break her leg. She only was bruised. And because of this, like, nature of her injury, Nancy was thankfully able to make a swift recovery, and she right away plunged back into her rigorous training.
Holy shit. That almost seems like a miracle.
Right?
Because I guess if the hit wasn't that hard, but you would think that that would break something.
It's got a good chance of it.
Yeah.
A slim chance you're not walking away without a severe permanent injury.
You have to wonder if they almost meant to hit the knee, because I feel like if you did that to the knee, for sure, you'd be out a while.
Shattering something. If you did it right on the kneecap, you would be shattering that kneecap, no problem.
So you almost wonder if it wasn't, in a way, a miracle and the attacker missed where they were supposed to.
Maybe. Regardless, though, the investigation on the attack on Nancy Kerrigan was unfolding. It drew upon a few different resources, the initial focus centering on the gathering crucial evidence from security footage from the Cabo Arena, which was the site of the attack. Now, the footage captured the assailants hasty fleeing from the scene. Sorry, I think I said that kind of weird. Hastily, there we go, fleeing from the scene, which was, of course, a pivotal piece of evidence for investigators. Now, this, in tandem with the footage, eyewitness testimonies also were able to kind of start describing this individual. So they're like, okay, we've now got camera footage. We have eyewitness statements kind of talking about this individual, what he looked like, who he might have been, what he was doing, all those sort of things. Their account provided valuable descriptions of the attacker and critical insight into the nature of the incident. Additionally, a bunch of tips and information flooded in from various sources, shedding light on potential leads and avenues of inquiry. Among the leads that emerged, a finger began getting pointed towards a woman by the name of Tanya Harding. Now, Tanya Harding was a figure skating prodigy hailing from Portland, Oregon. Raised by her mother, she embarked on a journey in the sport at the age of only 3 years old when she enrolled in her first ice skating lesson. From there, Tanya's dedication and talent propelled her through the ranks, leading her to make significant sacrifices, including dropping out of high school to fully commit to the passion of ice skating.
Whoa, that seems, I don't know. I don't necessarily, that's too far, I think.
I
get it.
It's difficult to speak on that.
Yeah.
As a parent, I'm not sure if, I mean, I'm not a parent, so I can't say, but if I were in those shoes, I'm not sure if I could allow my child to drop out of high school to do that. But at the same sense, it's like they are so promising for this. I don't know. It's a very difficult situation. Education is important, though.
If it's going to get them closer to like achieving their dreams, it's a tough situation.
Now, her ascent, though, in the U.S. Figure Skating Championships was from 1986 and 1989, which marked the beginning of her rise. She won the 1989 Skate American competition, and in 1991, she clinched the U.S. championship title and secured silver medal at the World Championships. Notably, Tanya even became the first American woman and only the second woman worldwide after Midori Ito to successfully execute a triple axel in competition. However, Tanya was a clear, direct competitor when it came to Nancy Kerrigan, which, now that she was a suspect, only fueled speculation into the attack on Nancy. Was a targeted effort specifically put out to eliminate her from the competition to make it a clear path for her to win easier? that became the prominent question.
To even have to think that way is kind of disgusting.
Hey? Oh, I know. But I mean, the evidence is there. Well, not necessarily evidence per se yet to say, but that's kind of what it's looking like. That's what people are starting to whisper and talk about.
Yeah, well, it makes sense.
So Tanya found herself at the center of scrutiny with all this finger pointing. With suspicions mounting about her involvement, and on January 18th of 1994, Tanya Harding found herself in the hot seat when she faced questioning from the district attorney and FBI accompanied by her legal counsel. The interrogation stretched over the length of 10 grueling hours, delving into intricate details of the case. In a pivotal moment, during the marathon of the interview, as interrogation progressed, Tanya's story took a dramatic turn. At this point, of course, she's maintaining her innocence and denying any sort of involvement. The tide shifted when she was confronted by an FBI agent who accused her of lying. In a startling revelation captured by an FBI transcript, Tanya conceded, admitting her knowledge that her husband or ex-husband, Jeff Galluli, and his involvement in expressing the remorse for her actions. So to quote her, quote, "I hope everyone understands I'm telling on someone I really care about. I know now Jeff is involved. I'm sorry."
Okay. And so she just decided to drop that bomb after 10 hours?
Correct. So she dropped the bomb that she knows her husband was involved. So now what's kind of coming out of this is that she knew after the fact of the attack that her husband had something to do with it. And it would be on January 19th that Jeff would surrender to the FBI. In the midst of the mounting scrutiny, Tanya faced immense media coverage, including a probing interview with Diane Sawyer on prime time, where she continued to maintain her innocence. However, as the investigation deepened, Jeff's testimony began to implicate Tanya, raising suspicions about her alleged involvement in the attack plot.
Well, I feel like it would more so be her idea. And she's just completely throwing her husband or whatever under the bus, eh?
Ex-husband.
So why would an ex-husband give a shit, you know? Like, I feel like.
Well, technically, they're ex-husband, but they're like kind of still husband and wife. She looks at him still as like her husband. They still have a relationship, but they're technically divorced. It's a weird thing.
I mean, you want your spouse to succeed, right? But like, would you have come up with this idea on your own?
Yeah, who knows?
I have trouble believing that.
Well, lucky enough, I did the research and we're going to talk all about that. Okay. but we're going to keep on track here. So I'm not going to divulge everything right away. We're going to keep going through the story in a linear fashion. So in an attempt to mitigate the damage on her own reputation, Tanya held a press conference to issue a prepared statement, expressing her regret for the attack on Nancy, emphasizing her respect for her fellow skater, and stated that she had no foreknowledge of the plot to attack her, but admitted to her failure to report crucial information promptly. In this statement, she cited legal nuances, emphasizing that withholding criminal knowledge alone does not constitute a crime under many state laws. So she's like, technically, I didn't do anything illegal by not coming forward right away, even though I knew who did it after she was attacked, but I didn't know beforehand.
That's not a crime?
In many state laws. That's what she said.
Okay, interesting.
So I'm sure in some states it was. Maybe it is more so now, but at the time, it was not necessarily in many states. A lot of people, though, didn't believe Tanya. They're like, okay, sure. She says this, but is that true? But regardless of all the controversy, as one must say, the show must go on, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, she's really covering her bases here.
Yeah. So regardless of what was occurring, investigation and everything, skating continued. The ladies' single skating event of the 1994 Winter Olympics held at the Hamar Olympic Amphitheater in Norway, and it came 7 weeks after the attack. Despite the challenges and the distractions, Nancy skated what she deemed to be the pinnacle of her career, delivering flawless performances in both the short program and free skate. Again, 7 weeks wow. after she was attacked. Badass of the day.
No kidding. That's freaking incredible.
So she had her leg bashed in with a metal baton and just skated the best performance ever at the Olympics.
Well, yeah, because she would have to heal from that. Which would also make it so that she didn't have quite as much practice in, right?
Yep.
So it's quite incredible.
Oh, you're telling me.
Wow. I almost want to, like, I probably watched that. I don't really remember. We were pretty young then. But I'd like to go back and watch that again.
We should.
Yeah.
So her remarkable displays on the ice earned her the silver medal. However, the event was not without controversy. Tonya Harding encountered difficulties with her equipment, specifically the laces on her skate, and was granted a reskate by the judges. However, regardless, Tonya finished in eighth place. Now, despite everything that's going on, Nancy emerged from the short program competition, so the short skate competition, in first place, hoping that she would clinch the gold. But the coveted gold slipped from her grasp as another competitor from Ukraine named Okasana Bale seized victory and closed the contested and controversial 5-4 decision during the free skate. So Nancy made away with silver.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, despite the bitter disappointment from falling short of the gold, her silver medal triumph serves quite as a testament to her resilience, obviously. But with the Olympics now being complete, the investigation ultimately led to the identification of several individuals involved in the planning. Because as the Olympics were being carried on, so was the investigation. And they found out a lot more information.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
So, the individuals who planned it and carried out the attack were including Tonya Harding's ex-husband, Jeff Gillooly, her bodyguard, Sean Eckhart, and other associates, Derek Smith and Shane Stant. So on January 13th, Sean and Derek were arrested. And the following day on January 14th, the United States Figure Skating Association made a public statement on whether the arrest affected Tonya Harding's Olympic placement. They said this about it, quote, "We will deal only with the facts." So Jeff, Tonya Harding's former husband, provided crucial testimony to the FBI regarding the attack plot, on January 26, 1994, divulging a detailed account of the events leading up to the infamous, now infamous, incident. So according to Jeff, this is all in his testimony on how this played out. The plan was made in early December of 1993. Following Tonya's disappointment at the 1993 NHK trophy competition, she was upset over her placement in the competition and reached out to Jeff, who empathized with her frustration. Subsequently, Jeff confided in his friend Sean Eckhart about the intricacies of figure skating and the politics and everything, right? Sean mentioned the idea in this conversation, kind of a passing mention. What if we just threaten her competition? Like, what if we threaten Nancy Kerrigan, you know, her main competitor, mm-hmm. in order hopefully get her to be too fearful of her own safety to compete, which would lead Tonya to free to compete and win. Jeff liked the idea and the thought, but the psychological impact on someone threatening skaters could actually have an impact on Tonya's performance as well. So despite the initial reservations, Jeff mentioned it to Tonya. So like potentially like, hey, what if we did this? Would that affect you? Would you be okay with it? What do you think? She liked the idea.
Oh my gosh. Man, this is a conversation that shouldn't be happening.
No. However, she expressed doubts that Sean would have the ability to execute the threats. In collaboration with his uncle, Derek Smith, Sean proposed a plan to instead actually injure Nancy while meeting with Jeff and Tonya to discuss details on the plan. However, negotiations hit a snag when Derek quoted the price of $4,500 to execute it. Later, after the meeting, Jeff attempted to cancel the deal, but was informed by Sean that Derek was already en route to Portland to execute the plan. He also needed further information about Nancy's whereabouts. Now, instead of insisting to cancel the plans like he originally said he wanted to, they moved forward with it. And on December 27th, Tanya reached out to her friend Vera Murano, a figure skating writer based in Pennsylvania, under the pretext of a, quote, bet she and Jeff supposedly had regarding Nancy's training whereabouts. So she's all like, hey, I'm just curious, where does Nancy train? You know, I got a bet with my husband on where that is.
Okay, that does not, that's so obvious, hey?
Yeah. No, Vera contacted the United States Figure Skating Association to obtain the name of her training rink, leaving a message on Jeff's and Tanya's answering machine about it. Now, despite this message, reportedly it was difficult to discern and understand what she had said, so Tanya called her again, requesting her to correctly spell the name of the arena while Jeff wrote it down, which was the Tony Kent Arena. So during her testimony on January 22nd in 1994, Vera Murano reiterated Tanya's question and the, quote, bet concerning Nancy Kerrigan, and disclosed that Tanya had also sought information about Nancy's potential property owned in Cape Cod. So she's not only asking where she practices, but where she lives. Mm-hmm. Now, in Tanya's 2008 authorized biography, quote, the Tanya Tapes, which was based on records, recorded interviews, Tanya denied ever soliciting information from Vera regarding Nancy's training rink. She even suggested that Vera may have misremembered details and was, quote, was a little bit out there.
Someone wouldn't just make that up, though.
I know. She also said, quote, I really didn't do anything wrong except ask questions to win a bet. It's just that this sounds bad. I think the bet was for a quarter or something like that. Big deal. So first she's saying that there was no bet, and then she's saying that there is a bet.
Yeah.
So what the fuck?
I mean, her ex-husband could have potentially did this bet, and she still might not have known. He was just making up this bet. But
there's potential there, yeah.
I'm playing like mega devil's advocate here.
Well, just say that is the fact. Remember that piece, okay? That her husband made up this bet for that piece, to get that piece of information, mm-hmm. Okay? If we can remember, we'll come back to that at the end of the podcast. Okay. There's a piece of information that we could attach to that.
Okay.
Okay? So on December 27th, Derek and his nephew, Shane Stant, arrived in Portland and made their way to Sean's house, where they requested a meeting with Jeff for the following day. The next day, December 28th, after Tanya completed her training at 10:30 a.m., Jeff drove them to Sean's home for the scheduled meeting. During the meeting, Jeff was introduced to Derek Smith and Shane Stant. Sean proposed various violent methods of incapacitating Nancy, including cutting her Achilles tendon or running her off the road in an accident, a car accident.
Gosh.
But Jeff went for a less severe approach, focusing solely on disabling Nancy's right leg, her landing leg. This decision allegedly was corroborated with Tanya beforehand. Allegedly. Remember, this is still all Jeff's testimony.
This is just so fucked, because at some point, like, I get maybe one or two conversations. I mean, it's so wrong. But at one point, you think you'd be like, okay, this is just like too fucked. Like, we can't do this. This is.
There's one thing with being like, oh, I wish I could just take out my competition.
Yeah.
Haha. Like a passing comment to your inner circle.
Which is still not great. But
yeah. But and then it's like, okay, this is becoming a recurring theme. This is a little too real. Like, no, this isn't actually happening, is it?
Like traveling somewhere and all the logistics. Like, this is too far.
Yeah. So following this initial meeting, Jeff outlined additional requirements for the execution of the plan, including acquiring another photo of Nancy and her skating schedule, so whoever's attacking her could know what she looks like and where she will be. Recognizing Tanya's familiarity with ice skating terminology, Jeff delegated the task to her, prompting her to contact Tony Kent Arena to obtain her, quote, patch and freestyle times and the arena's address. Additionally, they obtained two photos of Nancy from the World Team Handbook and Olympian magazine, with Tanya instructing Jeff to make sure that they remove the magazine's mailing label to conceal their home address. That evening, Jeff and Tanya visited Sean's residence with the photos, practice times, and $2,700 in cash. As January 1994 approached, Jeff and Tanya began growing increasingly frustrated by the so far failure of the plan because it had yet to be executed. Determined to salvage the scheme, Tanya arranged a late night skate session on January 1st, 1994 with Jeff, proposing an increased payment if Nancy could still be incapacitated before the national competition, because it's coming up. As a result, the attack finally went underway at Cobble Arena in Detroit 5 days later on January 6th, 1994. So we're finally at the actual, like, she's skating at the arena, just like we started at this. She's skating, doing her thing, stepping off the ice. And we're going to talk about exactly how the attack went down.
Okay.
So Shane Eckhart, in a 2018 interview, provided chilling details on how he executed the assault on Nancy Kerrigan. He described how he positioned himself approximately, quote, a foot and a half behind the camera crew, patiently waiting for them to cease filming before making his move.
Oh my goodness, of course.
So as Nancy passed through the curtains, unaware of the imminent danger, the camera turned away and he made his move.
And that was the moment, the time.
That was the time. The second the camera turned away, he passed by them, followed through that blue curtain, down the hallway, caught up to her, and yeah. So he approached her from behind with his telescopic baton and used it to strike the lower right thigh before swiftly fleeing the scene. To facilitate his escape, Sean smashed through a locked glass door to exit the arena. Outside, Derek Smith awaited in a car, ready to act as the getaway driver, which enabled him to evade capture from the fleeing capture from the scene immediately after. So Shane, Sean, and Derek all corroborate much of this testimony. Of course, there's a little bit of varying accounts and points of view in between, but the consensus between them all was Tanya was involved and she knew about the plan before it occurred.
Well, it sure kind of seems like it. It makes sense that she would be involved.
Yeah.
This story makes sense that there's no way, I don't think that she wouldn't have been.
Well, put it this way. I'm pretty sure she probably would have been at least somewhere in the vicinity of this training center. I'm pretty sure she would have recognized Sean. Hey, Sean, what are you doing here? Or Derek, you're out here in the parking lot. What are you doing here? You know? So, just saying.
Yeah.
So, on February 1st, 1994, Jeff's attorney managed a plea deal, where Jeff agreed to provide testimony implicating all parties involved in the attack. So, hence the testimony we just heard, right? Subsequently, in July, Jeff received a two-year prison sentence after publicly expressing remorse to Nancy Kerrigan, although he did admit that his apology would be very empty and didn't hold any fucking weight to it.
Oh, gosh.
Right? What a greaseball.
Why even bother?
Right? Now, additionally, Jeff and Sean pleaded guilty to racketeering charges, while Shane, Stant, and Derek Smith pleaded guilty to conspiracy to commit second-degree assault. On March 16th, 1994, this is the moment you're waiting for, Tanya Harding pleaded guilty to conspiracy to hinder prosecution, which is a Class C felony. Accompanied by her lawyer, Robert Weaver, Tanya also entered a plea agreement to ensure she would not face further prosecution. In return, she should provide testimony for her knowledge after the fact.
So she pleaded guilty, though.
She pled guilty to conspiracy to hinder prosecution. Oh,
okay. So
basically,
after the fact,
withholding information after the fact.
Yeah. Okay.
And now she's entering a plea agreement.
Oh.
Where she provides information after the fact.
Yeah.
Everything is after the fact here.
Yeah.
Now, as part of her sentencing, where she did plead guilty to conspiracy, Tanya received 3-year probation, a $100,000 fine, and was mandated to perform 500 hours of community service. She also agreed to reimburse Mulnett County $10,000 in legal fees, undergo a psychiatric evaluation, and contribute $50,000 to the Special Olympics Oregon charity. Had she not agreed to the plea deal, Oregon sentencing guidelines stipulated a maximum penalty of 5 years imprisonment.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, though I feel like she got off pretty easy there.
Yeah, I mean, she had to pay some hefty fines, but yeah, she served just, like, no time.
That's
500
just
hours?
Money. Yeah.
And I mean, with her sponsorship deals and stuff, I'm pretty sure that's like pennies for her.
Possibly, yep.
Now, furthermore, Tanya's plea bargain resulted in her resignation from the U.S. Figure Skating Association, necessitating a withdrawal from the 1994 World Championships, for which she was scheduled to depart on March 17th.
See, that's the biggest of punishment. She has to let go of her dream.
Yeah. So to sum up everything here for you, because I know things kind of got a bit confusing. It's quite a messy story, especially with all the names back and forth and the he said, she said, and all that sort of stuff. To break it down for you, the assault on Nancy Kerrigan was orchestrated by Jeff Gillooly, the ex-husband of Tanya Harding, mm-hmm. along with his accomplice, Sean Eckerd. They enlisted the service of Shane Stant and his uncle, Derek Smith, to execute the attack. Both Jeff and Sean alleged Tanya's involvement in the planning and premeditation of the assault. Initially, Tanya denied any association with the attack, but eventually she entered the plea agreement conceding her involvement to concealing the attack after it occurred. Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It does. Yep.
There is a bit of a follow-up to this, though.
Okay. What is it?
On March 21st, 1994, so it's only a few months later, the Portland grand jury issued a statement that shook the skating world. The culmination of over 2 months of relentless inquiry and testimony for the likes of Diane Rawlingson, which was Tanya's choreographer, Erica Brockes, who was a freelance figure skating writer, Vera Mano, and Sean Eckerd. Sean Eckert's college instructor and classmate, my bad. The indictment accused Tanya to fraudulently use United States figure skating monies to pay for the attack. It also said that Tanya, Jeff, Sean, Derek, and Shane, quote, knowingly caused physical injury by means of a dangerous weapon. The grand jury claimed evidence that showed Tanya Harding was, quote, involved from the very beginning or very close. However, due to her previous plea deal, she could no longer be charged.
I knew that was going to come back to haunt us. I knew it.
That's fucked.
That is.
I think new evidence should consult a new trial.
Actually, yeah, for sure.
There is a silver lining here. So she withdrew from the one competition, right?
Mm-hmm.
On June 29th, the United States Figure Skating Association disciplinary panel met over the course of 9 hours within the span of 2 days, evaluating her role in the attack on Nancy Kerrigan. On June 30th, Chairman William Hibble stated, quote, by a preponderance of evidence, the panel did conclude that she had prior knowledge and was involved prior to the incident. This is based on civil standards, not criminal standards, bank records, phone records, the way they came together to establish the case. The panel decided that the FBI reports, court documents, and the plea deal that she entered, quote, were a clear disregard for fairness, good sportsmanship, and ethical behavior. As a result, Tanya Harding was stripped from her 1994 U.S. championship title and banned for life from participating in any United States Figure Skating Association events, either as a skater or a coach.
Oh, right there just shows you, hey?
Yep.
She, I feel like, played her cards really well.
Yep.
To get out off, like, oh, this is, it's frustrating to listen to this.
Oh, it really is.
Yeah.
I do want to end this on one final note. In 2018, Tanya shared a bit more about the attack. She mentioned knowing beforehand about Jeff and Sean talking about, quote, taking out one of her competitors in late 1993. She stated she objected, saying she wanted to win fairly and questioned them about their conversation. This is a straight admittance directly from her, mm-hmm. not evidence showing. It's an admittance that she had prior knowledge of the assault at the very least.
That she's a liar.
Now let's go back to when you talked about that bet. She had prior knowledge. Now her husband is saying, hey, what's the address? I bet you can't remember it.
Shit. Yeah.
You think your red flag would pop up there?
No kidding. Because that she knows, like, this is one of my biggest competitors. You don't forget a conversation like that.
Right.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, I mean, I feel like she got off so easy here. But then also the whole banned from doing something that she was obviously so passionate and loved so much would be like
a slap in the face.
Yeah. Oh, like definitely. Almost, you know, as bad as going to prison probably, because like she has to figure out. Well, no. I take that back. Not almost as bad, but like pretty shitty. You'd have to rethink your whole life. I mean, but she dropped
out of high school. She has no education because of figure skating.
Right. Shit.
So now she can't figure skate. Now what? But that also being said, I mean, no matter, she did enter some other sports later on in her life. Like, I think she went into boxing in like the previous 10 years or something like that. But endorsements and sponsorships, I bet you anything. And I did read that they were very hard to come by for anything she was doing because no one wanted to work with her on anything.
Well, yeah. And didn't she write a book though?
Oh, she had a book that was written by another author based on records and pre-approved by her.
Okay. But so, I mean,
there might be other books.
She's probably not like super struggling for money though.
Oh, I don't think she is. No.
Yeah.
She probably had a couple million in the bank when this all happened. And if she was smart, she'd probably just sitting there laughing on a beach right now somewhere anyways.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Huh.
Now, as for Nancy though, after the Olympics, she participated in several competitions ongoing.
Okay.
Also in other competitions like Ice Wars, but mainly concentrated on performing in various ice shows. These included Champions on Ice, Broadway on Ice, and an ice show version of the musical Footloose, among others. I think she actually even was on Dancing with the Stars.
Cool.
In 2003, she would take on the role of a national spokeswoman for Fighting for Sight, and continuing to be an all-around, I mean, badass woman.
Well, no kidding.
Yeah. So she continued being an athlete, regardless of the situation, regardless of what sort of avenue she went in, whether it was a Olympic athlete or these other like Ice Wars and all these other things, Broadway on Ice, for example. Mm-hmm. She's both an Olympic competitor and a Broadway star. Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
Badass.
I mean, she's obviously amazing.
Yeah, no kidding. So she is doing very well. And I did also watch an interview where she never actually really received an apology from Tanya.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, that doesn't even really surprise me, to be honest.
Yeah. So that's the story of Nancy Kerrigan and the Olympic assault. I don't even know what I'm going to title this yet, because how do you put all this into a title?
No kidding. I don't even know. I would just maybe title it her name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll just be, you know what? I'm going to say Nancy Kerrigan, Olympic competitor, Olympic athlete.
Yeah, something
like Olympian.
That. I mean, because
that's what she is. She competed 7 weeks after. Holy fuck.
Which is incredible. I feel like figure skating used to be a lot more popular. I feel like. Or maybe, I don't know. I just feel like, or this event maybe made it more known.
Well, I mean, this is all pre-social media too, right? So it was like when the Olympics were happening, it was like everyone was watching, I feel like.
Yeah.
I know growing up, like my mom was quite into watching the Olympics. Figure skating was one of those things. She was a big fan of Elvis Stoiko, I remember back in the day. And I remember seeing some, he was retired by the time I remember, but I do remember Kurt Browning and his backflips.
Oh, geez. Well, like, there was just like some really incredible, I guess, athletes.
Yeah. No, the figure skating was an extremely competitive division. And I'm sure it still is today. It's just not as like prominent in mainstream media.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Maybe. But I mean, also, I think there was a lot of drama back then.
Yeah. It seemed like an assault on someone.
That made it very much so more in the foreground, right?
Yeah. But it's without a doubt that Tanya was involved prior to.
Mm-hmm.
There is evidence of it. There's things like phone records that were found and pulled. There's receipts and stuff. She admitted it. And she did not serve the time because of her fucking plea deal. That I honestly feel if new evidence comes out, a new trial should be warranted.
Yeah. No, I agree. Because, yeah, when she got that plea deal, she was probably just like dancing away. Yeah. Just like, yes.
And I do know that, like, I've heard in other cases, I've researched this before, where they've gone into a new trial, and they can't reuse evidence from the first one.
Right.
They have to have new evidence. Mm-hmm. So I would think that new evidence should warrant that.
Yeah.
Like if you're in jail for a crime that you didn't commit and you get evidence, you get a retrial. So if you're out of jail and there's new evidence that you did, it's the exact opposite. There should be a retrial. Mm-hmm. To me, that makes sense, but I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, gosh, what she like assaulting, being part of an assault like that is, you should be paying some time.
Yeah. She's skeezy. Skeezy as fuck.
Oh, I was like, ski easy. What do you mean?
No, not ski easy.
I was like, is she skiing now?
No.
Is she good at skiing?
She's not a skier. She's skeezy.
Skeezy, yeah.
She's slimy.
Yeah, no kidding.
She's the douche canoe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She is someone you would want to, you know, stay a little bit away from.
Especially if she's holding a baton or someone she knows is holding a baton.
Or if someone she knows is doing better than her.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
That's the real thing.
Don't compete with Tonya Harding. She'll take you out at the knees.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Yeah.
This one's been on my list for a while. Hopefully you guys enjoyed this one. It's a story and a half. This
different.
You can go down a very big rabbit hole with this story.
Oh, yeah.
It was a difficult one to research because all the little nuances that, like I said, the he said, she said, and all this sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. We mostly just went over Jeff's testimony. There are other testimonies, but Jeff's is the most prominent one that really spills the evidence. He's the one that went through the plea deal. So the others basically just corroborated his story, but there is still some other information to go through. And the later evidence as well that they kind of came through that said, hey, she actually did have prior knowledge. Things like that. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Man, I mean, this story is terrible. It could have been a lot more terrible if Nancy wasn't so freaking amazing.
Right?
Yeah.
God, she's a badass.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Big time.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this episode. If you want to find any of our socials, any of our links, watch this on a video form where my hands are flashing back and forth with the camera and I'm still drinking my beer because it's hard to do a podcast and drink at the same time.
Is it cold still?
It's still cold.
Oh, okay.
But the link for the YouTube video is in the description of this podcast. Yeah.
Yeah. All the links are below. You know,
all of them are down there.
You need to know
everything about us, website, Patreon, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. It's all there. Mm-hmm. We haven't actually said this for a while. We would actually like to request, if you guys like the show, we would appreciate a rating. Go ahead and give us a rating, whatever you feel is appropriate and honest. Forget all that. Just give us a 5-star. It really helps the show.
I know. I was like, whoa, you're being really nice. It does really help.
It does help boost the show. So we really appreciate everyone who has rated us. And if you're going to go ahead and give us one, thank you so much. And thank you for being here to the very end while we're still rambling.
Yeah. Yeah. That's our thing.
That's our thing.
But anyway, good job.
Thank you.
And until next time.
Stay wicked.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.